We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
I'm Clint Sterner, joined by Wade Smith. Romeo Crennel, the team's primary defensive coordinator since 2014, for the most part, has put top 10 defenses on the field for the Houston Texans over, really, since he's been here. He sat out a year, but Vrabel took over the offense at one point. What year was that? Was that?
I think it was 17.
16,
16 or 17, one of those. And, I think it was 17, though.
And the stats dropped just a little bit, but for the most part, or actually they went up. The points per game actually increased a tad bit. But Romeo Crennel has done a great job of putting – a defense on the field that the Texans could be proud of. This year, the defense fell apart mostly due to injuries. I mean, injuries were an absolute monster on the defensive side of the football this year at all three levels. Benardry McKinney was out. J.J. Watt was out. Tayshaun Gibson was out. Bradley Roby was out at all three levels, up front, D-line, linebacker level, and in the secondary. There were key parts of this defense that were out, so obviously it wasn't a great year. But I think we start things off by saying, Romeo Crennel, we salute the heck out of you, man, for your time as a Houston Texans defensive coordinator. And all in all, he's done a hell of a job.
Yeah, he did more with less. You know what I mean?
No
if
doubt.
If you compare it to what's going on the offensive side of the ball and the amount of resources that have been dedicated to the offense as compared to what he had to work with on defense, he did more with less. And so, Romeo has been a bona fide defensive coordinator in this league for years now. He did a good job. Overall, if you say, hey, at 2014 to this point since he's been here, overall he's did a hell of a job for the Houston Texans organization. I think he's going to stay on. If I had to put money on it, I'd say he's going to probably stay on as a defensive, a senior kind of assistant type guy in an advisory role. But that's really up to him.
I think
they want him over there in the building because he brings a wealth of knowledge and experience, and he can help with the decision making that's going on over there. And I think him being there would help that, and they need that over there. They need that veteran presence and somebody that Bill O'Brien respects his opinion and wants to hear what he has to say. So if he does decide to stay, that would be good for the organization. But salute Rack. He did a hell of a job. And like I said, a lot of it had to do with the guys not being healthy and not being the particular guys that he needs to play in his scheme. And so he's had to work through multiple defensive backs, bringing in new guys, getting them assimilated to the defense mid-season. Like, you bring in Hargraves, you bring in Conning, like, you bring in guys off the street, and they're having to go in there and play big minutes. And for the most part, the guys that were brought in did a good job. So you have to give Romeo Crennel a lot of credit for that.
Well, the big part of this day for the Houston Texans, a big announcement is Anthony Weaver, former defensive line coach for the Houston Texans, has been named the defensive coordinator. And there's several reasons why I like this move, Wade. And I'll start with one. I think the resume, man. You talk about the resume. This guy's coached. He was, as a player, he was drafted by Baltimore. Rex Ryan was his coach there. As a coach, once he got through playing as a professional, he went into coaching. Rex Ryan with the Jets is where he worked first. Doug Marrone with the Bills, he spent some time there. And Mike Pettine with the Browns. All three of those guys are really solid defensive coordinators that if you give me a former player that played in a Baltimore system in 2002 and beyond, that guy's cut from a certain cloth. That guy believes in defense being played a certain way. And so, Wade, when you talk about his resume and how he learned how to coach and how to play the position from the guys that he worked with, both the player and a coach, you got to be impressed.
Yeah, he's an excellent teacher. You can see it by the way his defensive line has played since he's arrived here with the Houston Texans. It's very similar to what you saw out of Mike Vrabel when he was here in the job he did with Whitney Mercilus and guys like that. It's from a linebacker position, that's what you've seen out of Anthony Weaver. And so now this is a natural progression. He's a guy that has shown that he has the ability to teach at a high level. He has the locker room behind him as far as his position group and just in general. Guys love Anthony Weaver and the fact that they makes him a better player. So now you take that to the natural progression of being the defensive coordinator, because if he didn't get that job here, he would have got it somewhere else. He was one of those guys that is talked highly about around in coaching circles. And so when you have young talent on your roster, that goes with coaches, that goes with players. If you have young talent, you want to retain them. You want to keep them. And that's what you're going to see out of having Anthony Weaver.
Wade, I think the other big story from this weekend, obviously, is all the conference championship games. They took place yesterday. I thoroughly enjoyed them, by the way. Kansas City Chiefs will be facing the San Francisco 49ers in the Super Bowl. I'm excited about this matchup, Wade, because you've got one really, really exotic offensive passing game, and you've got one really, really exotic dynamic offensive running attack, and they're going to be paired off against two defenses. I think San Francisco's defense is obviously legit. Kansas City's still earning their stripes. They've played awfully good over about a two-month span here. This Super Bowl matchup is going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, there's nothing vanilla about this matchup at all. You're talking about creative offensive on both sides of the building. You got San Francisco that runs the ball 40, 50 times a game, and they're going to do it in multiple ways. They're going to give you different looks. There's going to be shifts and motions that they use to take advantage of it, and everything is going to work in concert. What they're going to do in the run game is going to – that's going to show how they're going to do in the pass game as well. Same thing with the Kansas City Chiefs, man. People talk about the fact that Kansas City can throw the ball so well, and they can. But everything works in concert to what they're going to actually do in the run game. Everything works in what's the word I want to use for it?
It's unison.
It's in unison. It's in alignment. Everything works. It's telling the same story. Everybody's on the same page. Like, I'm not calling plays based off of, all right, I want to run a run now, so that I'm going to call this run. Now I'm going to run a pass now, I'm going to call this pass. That's not how it works. It's like, I'm calling this run on play two now because I want to hit him with this run on play five. And it's going to work to where the defense is going to see the same thing, and I'm going to gash him. And so both coordinators do an excellent job of putting a story together as far as calling the offensive game.
Yes.
And it's beautiful to watch. It's poetry in motion. The way that they stress defenses and they have their own identities and they stick with it and they're aggressive, that's why they're in the Super Bowl now. That's why they've been able to play at such a high level. Of course, they have great players, but they don't just rest on the fact that they have great players. They make it easier for their players. They create mismatches. They create leverage. That's the job of Andy Reid, and that's the job of Kyle Shanahan. Both of them do an excellent job of that. And that's why they're in the big game.
Which job, Wade, is more impressive in your opinion offensively?
Oh, that's a great question. Which one is more impressive?
Which one do you think is more difficult to accomplish? I think the run game.
I think it's more difficult to accomplish in today's game of football because you cannot do a lot of things that you did in the past offensively running the ball. You cannot – you know, the cut blocking thing, like they're running outside zone, but they're not allowed to cut block on the backside of plays anywhere near the way that they could in the past. So now you have to figure out other ways to get the same thing done. I think it's extremely impressive in both cases, but I'd have to give it to the 49ers in that run game because finding a tight end like Kittle that can be such a mismatch in the pass game but then dominates at the point of attack in the run game, and finding him, I believe, in the fifth round or whatever he was drafted in, putting him in there, and he does an excellent job. There's not a lot of teams that can replicate what the 49ers do as far as the amount of skilled players that they put into great positions. The Deebo Samuels of the world, Mostert, Breda, Tevin Coleman got injured, but him, all of those guys – when you put them all together and you put them in that scheme, it's very difficult to stop, and that's what you've seen out of the 49ers.
You know what's been impressive to me is, like, when I looked at the 49ers preseason, I thought, where are they going to throw the ball? Where are they going to find them? Even with Emmanuel Sanders, I like him. He's a good player, but he's still like,
But they had to do a midseason trade to even get him in the building.
Yeah.
But they didn't have any receivers to start off the year. They were struggling.
Right, but it's one of those deals where you're like, just load the box up and play, man, you lock these dudes up. But they're so creative inside with their motions. And I know they do this at the high school level, but I think it's the first time that I've personally seen it done at the pro level. And maybe, maybe it's because when we follow the Texans, they don't do a lot of this. But he, they did a.
That was a slick drive by.
they had a read. They zone read either a D tackle.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
Yeah.
Well, see, they blocked the left tackle blocked the end.
Mm-hmm.
Or the outside linebacker, I can't remember which one it was.
It was the end.
It was they're playing Green Bay, so that they play. It was an end. Either way, it's a body out there.
Yeah,
he kicked out and blocked the guard, the left guard over. They all ran hard. They ran zone to the right.
Mm-hmm.
They left the damn three technique or five, whatever, wherever he was.
You read him.
They left the D tackle unblocked and read a D tackle. I mean, you think about it, and you go, man, that's crazy that they would do that. But why would you leave a backer or an end? Why would you leave the best athletes in the box unblocked versus a defensive end? All they're doing is leaving the lesser of the athletes unblocked and saying, you can't tackle my running back in space.
Yeah, there is a way, if you have the right talent on your offensive roster, there is a way that if you dictate to defenses, you can put them in a position where they're never right. That is the beautiful thing about utilizing zone reads, utilizing RPOs, utilizing play action pass. If you know how to tell a story, you can make it to where they're never right. And the times that they're right, it's like, oh, they lucked on it. They made an exceptional play in the open field to make a tackle. You know, you see a guy like Sorensen for Kansas City makes a bunch of open field tackles recently. He'd be a guy that I want to have teaching table, how to tackle in the open field. But you're forcing defenses to make plays like that in order to slow you down, not to stop you from getting explosive plays,
right,
but to stop you from getting 4 and 6 and 12 and 11 and methodically moving the ball down the field and taking someone's heart away. It's not by brute force these days. That time is kind of come and gone. You don't have the Cowboys line of the 90s.
Yes.
Just by brute force, we're gonna run ISO lead downhill at you, 8 men in a box, and it ain't gonna matter because we can double team, get up to the second level, beat you up. We're going to move the line of scrimmage coming straight off the ball. It doesn't work like that. Guys aren't built like that anymore. So they're doing it in a way to where we're going to stress your defense vertically. We're going to stress it horizontally. We're going to leave a guy unblocked and read him. You talk about a weird feeling to be a three technique coming up the field and like nobody's blocking you. You're looking for, am I going to get trapped? Am I going to, oh, they're running up. Oh, the running back just ran past.
Right.
You know, it's very difficult to play that. And so it's very impressive the job that the 49ers and teams are doing today in the NFL.
Yeah, man. I mean, I've seen that in college. I got a high school buddy of mine that's a great coach, and he put, you know, he does that in high school all the time, of leaving the three technique or the inside lineman free as the force player or the player that they're reading it, and they make a lot of plays off of it, get a lot of production out of that. But to see it done at the NFL level, man, it's just. It's fun to watch. That's how far our league has come, Wade, is there to that point. That's how far the high school game and the college game has crept into the NFL game, man. It's beautiful. So, obviously, 5 o'clock fire. The biggest story of the day is today we celebrate the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, baby. MLK Day. I hope everybody's out there celebrating. I hope everybody's out there being safe, making memories with their friends and family. We got you for another, I don't know, about another 45 minutes, and then we're up out of here too to celebrate a little bit. But adversity's tough in sports. The best thing that can happen to a team or a person is after a little of adversity, you gotta step to the media. You gotta face the fans. You gotta face the public. The Astros did that Saturday. We'll hear from a few of their stars next, right here on Sports Radio 610. Yo, hello, we back. That was quick, baby. Oh, man, I'm glad we
get to talking in the break, bro. We weren't stuck in. Look up and it's like, hold on, I hear it's a comeback music. It's time. We got to talk again. Let's get to it.
That's right. Wade, there was obviously all the smoke over off Kirby, man, has got us a little bit caught up in the Texans today. But the Astros, man, the Astros had their fan fest Saturday. As I told you earlier, man, I was an Astro buddy, so I'm fond of these types of experiences for kids and for fans. Some people may think that this is just another day, but it's important. To me, this is not your everyday fan fest. This is not your everyday meet the fan, everybody show up, happy-go-lucky, skip around the park a little bit, and shake a couple hands, kiss a couple babies, and move forward, man. This was the timing was great for the Astros. When you talk about adversity and facing adversity, Wade, I think it's so critical for whether you're an individual player or a team that's gone through some pretty serious black eyes over the last week.
Yeah.
I think the first part of getting beyond it is meeting with the media. Going to fan fest type events and interacting with your fan base and allowing them to ask you the questions that they want to ask. Good, bad, or indifferent. I think facing that music, so to speak, is a good thing. So this wasn't just your average everyday fan fest. And some of the superstars were out. The owner was out. A couple of the superstars were out there talking. And I want to hear from Altuve. There he is, Jose Altuve, talking about the investigation into him in the jersey issue with him not wanting his jersey ripped off. When he was asked about that, this is what he had to say.
I wasn't upset, to be honest. Even though it wasn't true, you know, we all know that you know, some people made that up. And like I said, the best thing that happened to me was the MLB investigate that, and you know, they didn't find something. But at the same time, you know, you can't control everything. You know, you control what you can control it.
Jose Altuve was also asked about being called a cheater. I'm assuming about moving forward, about, you know, being called a cheater in Major League Baseball based off of the Major League Baseball report that came out last week. This is Jose Altuve addressing that.
Oh, yeah. You know, you don't want anybody to call you like that. But like I said, you know, I have two options. One, just cry, or one, go out there and play the game and performance and help my team. And you know which one I'm going to do. So.
We do. We do, Jose. We know exactly what you're going to do and go out there and ball out, man. Wade, I alluded to it in the open of this segment about facing the music. And the whole point, man, is that if you just give the media a chance to ask their questions, the line of questioning will change in the future. Let them ask all the difficult questions, and if you'll give a genuine, sincere response, then the next time you talk to the media in a week or in 2 weeks, it won't be about cheating.
Yeah.
It won't be about what the investigation. It'll be about you saying that you're gonna guarantee this or that.
Listen, there's no reason for Jose Altuve to be upset that somebody said that he was using buzzers or anything of that nature. He knows that as a group and as a clubhouse, there were multiple guys on there that did something that was underhanded, that was scandalous, that was cheating. And so because of that, you're going to have to deal with people making false accusations, people questioning, can you play or can you not play? Is that the reason why you're a champion or not? But see, what Jose Altuve knows is that, yeah, we did that back in 2017 and summer 2018, but we stopped doing that, and we still made it to a World Series this past year, and we were in Game 7. So we know that we can still play at a high level. I know I have to deal with some of the backlash because I'm a leader on this team. You don't think Jose Altuve knew something about what was going on? Being a leader on the team, it's hard for me to believe. So he knows something was going on, and because of that, you have to deal with some blowback. It is what it is. He's going to go out there and play ball, and so – it was good to hear him address the situation and not run from it.
Yeah.
And that's always good to hear from a perspective of somebody that following someone. If you're a kid that and a grown man, grown woman that's a fan of Altuve and what the Astros have done over the past 3, 4, 5 years, you're going to want to hear something from them. And so he's addressing it, I think, the right way.
Yeah, wait, it's Martin Luther King Day, as you know, as we all know, as Houston knows. My favorite quote, or one of my favorite Martin Luther King Jr. quotes, is the ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy. I can't say it the way that the great Martin Luther King Jr. could say it, but I'll give it my damnedest.
And basically what he's saying is, don't be a front runner.
Yes,
you know
right.
what I mean? Don't
That's
be
right.
the type of person that you love to talk when everything is going right. You can talk to the media. You're amicable guy.
Yep.
You're very gregarious. Everyone loves you when things are going right. But when it goes wrong, you switch up, and now you're quiet. Altuve sounded in that interview the same way he sounds every other time he steps up to the mic and talks to the media. That's one of the reasons why you love to support and pull for a guy like Jose Altuve. He's the same guy every day. And so that's what you saw from those interviews at FanFest.
Well, you're gonna like what you're gonna hear next, Wade. You're gonna like what you're gonna hear next. This is Altuve talking about this upcoming season.
Believe me, in the end of the year, everything will be fine. We're gonna be in the World Series again. People don't believe it. We will. You know, we will. Like, we made it last year. We went one game away of winning it all. You know, I'm happy for the Nationals. They won everything. They're a really good team. They deserve it, but we'll be in the World Series again. Maybe with them, maybe with another team.
You want to change the line of questioning? There you have it. There's a lesson in changing the line of questioning moving forward.
Let's change the narrative.
Yeah, let's change the narrative. You said you're going to win the World Series next year. What the hell are you talking about? No more concerns about cheating. Jim Crane, the Astros owner, he also spoke about the current state of the Astros.
You know, we went through it Monday. You know, we made some mistakes. You know, we made a decision to let that get behind us. You know, we think the future's bright. We'll make the adjustments. You know, you've got a lot of really smart people here in the baseball ops, and it's very deep. And, you know, people think we're in crisis. I certainly don't believe that. We'll be fine. We'll get this behind us. We'll get going, and we'll start playing baseball in the spring.
I love that. I love the fact that Jim Crane, the owner's out there in an adverse time, addressing the media at not just in a post game presser or a scheduled presser, but at FanFest. Wade, where does this, hearing Jim Crane speak in this type of moment with the Astros, at that kind of event, and really he's been open. I mean, I guess he's had to be because the GM and the manager have been fired. But I mean, what do you? Does that make you think that anything differently about ownership with the Houston Texans and how they tend to work and operate in shadows and never address the media?
So this is the thing. You're talking about Jim Crane and him addressing a situation that was a nationwide Major League Baseball scandal and him having to address it head on and firing his GM and firing the manager. That's one thing. Kyle McNair is in a situation where his team just won another division championship. They made it to the second round of the playoffs. They improved on what they did last year. He's not in a crisis situation. That's part of the reason why I want to kind of caution people to recalibrate their mindset and their timeline on when something is going to change or be there's going to be some type of movement over there in NRG when it comes to the people that are making decisions, Bill O'Brien, stuff like that. If you look at it from Kyle McNair's perspective, my organization is worth over $1 billion. I sell out every game. Our team got better than it did the year before. It's not a crisis situation. So I would love to hear from Kyle McNair to see where his head's at, but to expect them like I expect to hear from Jim Crane, yeah, to me, logically, it just doesn't make sense because Jim Crane's in a situation where people are calling for a return of a championship. They're calling for you know, crazy stuff people talking about. They should take away all their home games next year. There's all kind of talk out there. So Jim Crane has to be the front runner and take control of the situation and say, hey, I'm going to lead us. And it's not to the promised land because I've already been to the promised land, but we're going to go back to the promised land again. We have a damn good team. And so I'm going to be front and center to address the situation. I think putting the same set of expectations on the two owners, they're not in the same places of their business. And that's what I think people are missing. When it comes to Kyle McNair, people are expecting him to step forward and explain why Bill O'Brien is coming back. And from his perspective, it's like Bill O'Brien has won how many games since he's been here? You know what I mean? The players believe in him. You know, there's a lot of things where from his perspective, you say, hey, what reason do I have to panic? Now, from our perspective, from fans' perspective, you say, well, damn, he's done X, Y, and Z. He's had some unforgivable moments. He's not amicable with the media. He's very unlikable, so we want him gone. And I get that sentiment, but if you're a business person and you operate based off of only what people say on Twitter, what people say on sports radio shows, you'll be broke. The bottom line is every game is sold out. Bottom line is there's no corporate sponsors that are leaving because of something that Bill O'Brien did. That's why I want people to just understand, like, it's not the same thing, and understand what it would take for Bill O'Brien to be out of here.
Yeah, I mean, when it's all said and done, that we can talk about the seat being hot. And I think when you have those kinds of conversations, you and I have alluded to it multiple times. He's backed into a corner, and the seat is hot because he's built. I mean, he's created that possibility.
He's continuing to create a scenario to where you can only point the finger at one point. So either it's going to be he's going to sink or swim.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'd much rather have that situation to where you can point the finger and say, hey, you're going to either sink or swim based off of what you've done, or and then you can just go from there, as opposed to having a scenario where you're kind of saying, well, was it Rick Smith's fault, or was it this guy's fault, or was it that GM, or they didn't know it? Get everybody you need in place. Go to work.
Yep.
And if it doesn't work, then we can move on. And so I think that's what you're seeing from Kavanier.
Wade, you alluded to something briefly there, and I want to hit it on the backside of this break, man. I mean, you said something in prep and right there. You mentioned it a little bit earlier on the show about recalibrating expectations as fan base and realizing really where Bill O'Brien is and where he's going to remain in the near future. We'll talk about that next right here on Sports Radio 610. Joined by Wade Smith, former Houston Texans offensive lineman, 12-year NFL vet, pro bowler back in the day. My man, Wade Smith. Wade, you mentioned earlier, man, and I'm going to co-sign it, by the way. Yep, real strong. I'm going to co-sign it.
Okay,
sure am.
Okay.
The fan base need to recalibrate their expectations, and maybe it might lead to them enjoying their life a little bit, enjoying their fandom a little bit of the Houston Texans. Explain, my man.
Yeah, when you look at it, you know, there's a lot of people that want Bill O'Brien out over there at NRG, and I understand it. There's a lot of reasons why you would want them to make a change over there, based off of the performance that Bill O'Brien has given you over the past, I guess it's 6 going on 7 years now that he's been over there. I understand it. I get it. I understand when you look at his press conferences, you see interactions with the fans on going into a tunnel, or you see decisions that get made in critical situations. You see an offense not perform at its best. You say, man, we need to make a change. I get it. But the problem with that is this. Cal McNair sees, I have a coach in place that consistently wins me 10 games a year, like 9-10 games a year. And so, and also he's been winning these 9-10-11 games a year and not having all of his people in place to do what he wants to do. And so that's starting with Rick Smith being here and having to work together with Bill O'Brien. Those two guys are like oil and water. Like like they're two totally different philosophies on how to build teams. One guy comes from, you know, that Shanahan tree, that West Coast offense type tree, and so the personnel that fits that. And then you have somebody coming from the Belichick Parcells tree and the personnel that fits that way of getting things done. Both of them are championship formulas, but when you mash them two together, it doesn't make sense. And so I was surprised it lasted as long as it did from there. But there was some good that came out of that. There's some bad that comes from that. But until you give the guy a full-on opportunity to where you say, all right, everything is in place for you, and if it goes wrong, then you're gone. Then and you're consistently winning, and you're consistently in the conversation, and you're consistently the value of your organization keeps going up. It doesn't make any sense for you to make a drastic change. To fire a head coach in the NFL, that's a drastic change. And it's be careful what you wish for when you make a change like that. And so when you look at it, you say, hey man, Bill O'Brien has to make the team better offensively. That's his role. He's supposed to be offensive coordinator, so you have to figure out a way to improve that. But you see Chris Olsen, he got let go, right? Chris Olsen gets let go. Why is that? It has to do with the fact that he is not one of Bill O'Brien's guys. It's another guy that's an old guard that Bill O'Brien's got to get everything lined up to where you can say, hey, Kyle McNair can say, hey, I gave you everything you wanted, and you still failed. Now you got to go. But the key part to this that I think people are missing is Deshaun Watson. Deshaun Watson is going to get paid, like you're talking about, $190 million over the next 5 years. Once he gets paid that big money, that's when Bill O'Brien goes on the clock. Because once that investment gets made, you're talking about cash money going out of the building.
Yeah.
It's one thing you talk about salary cap, moving money around, but there's a lot of guaranteed money that's going to be going out of the building. So as a business owner, when I make that much of an investment on a player or a person or something that's in my business, I got to see the ROI. I got to see the return on that investment. And so if Bill O'Brien is still struggling to bring the best out of Deshaun Watson in year 7, 8, 9 of Deshaun Watson, that's when he's going to say, we got to make a change. The team is still going to be good because you got Deshaun Watson. You're still going to be winning 9, 10, 11, 12 games. But if that is at that point, that's when you would say, all right, they're gonna make that switch. The thing that people are asking for now, you got a lot of talent on your team. You got a good roster. You're competing with the big dogs, but you can't get over the hump. They're wanting that thing to happen now. It's not – there's no reason for the businessman, Kyle McNair, to make that move. But once Deshaun gets paid, that's when Bill O'Brien goes on the clock. So with that in mind, watch the Texans with the mindset, I'm just going to enjoy these players. I don't like the head coach, but I'm going to enjoy these players. I'm going to enjoy the fact that we're competing. I'm going to enjoy Deshaun Watson and what he brings to the table as a player and the acrobatic plays and the type of guy he is and the bunch of other guys that are on the team that are brought here. Enjoy it that way, because I don't want people to just be – I mean, I hear guys like Larry Stafford talking about, I'm not gonna go inside the game. I want to see Larry and Chef Stafford in the game cheering for his team.
No question.
Because that's his team. Don't let Bill O'Brien take your joy away from enjoying and watching the Houston Texans.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, there's certain things that you can and certain things you can't control. And until people say – hey, we're not going to have corporate sponsors over there anymore because of Bill O'Brien, which is not going to happen.
Right.
Stop like governing yourself with that thought process, because now you're hurting yourself. You ain't hurting nobody over there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I want people to enjoy the good things about the Houston Texans.
Yeah. When it's all said and done, the reality of it is, Wade, is at this point in time right now, when there's been some struggles. There's some obvious struggles, right? I mean, I wouldn't get on the air and talk about it if there weren't. There's been some obvious struggles over there, particularly on the offensive side of the football, which Bill O'Brien is responsible for. You know, at a time you would think that there would be some staying put, or maybe some a little bit of slide in confidence, and maybe the seat getting a little bit hot. It appears that Bill O'Brien is gaining power through this process. And so for everybody out there to continue to harp on the Bill O'Brien hot seat, Bill O'Brien shouldn't be the head coach, we're going to move on, that's crazy, right? I mean, at this point in time, Bill O'Brien's going to be the head coach of the Houston Texans.
Yeah, it's not crazy from the perspective of you wanting that, but
yeah,
it's crazy.
Right,
from the perspective of you letting that govern how you enjoy your team.
Right.
This is the Texans are going to be the Texans. But they were here before Bill O'Brien got here. They're going to be here after Bill O'Brien leaves.
Right.
He's not going to be here forever. Don't let that part of it take away your love for the Houston Texans team.
Here's what I think, Wade, is that Bill O'Brien's going to be here, and I'm okay with that as a head coach. I don't GM did a great job. I think he's done a great job as a head coach. I'm a guy that firmly believes and respects a coach that builds culture. And I think they've done a great job of putting a roster together. Could be some improvements. There's some moves that need to be made, but they've done a good job. And Wade, when I look at it, I go, I'm completely okay with him being the face of the organization, but there's got to be one change.
Yeah.
They got to make another change.
What is that?
Offensive coordinator.
Okay.
It's got to be done, Wade. It's got to be done. Why? Because the team, I think it's to sum it all up and put a bow on it, right? I think this team as an offense, Hopkins, Watson, you can talk about Duke Johnson. I know you're hot on that from the last game. You can talk about Kiki QT not being used. I just don't believe that the offensive coordinator for this football team puts this offensive unit in position to have success anywhere close to the way that you see other offensive coordinators doing across the league.
Yeah.
We can dive into the X's and O's of it, the motions, the formations, the concepts with the reads and the RPOs. We can jump into all that. We've talked until we can't talk anymore about that particular deal. It's real. It's obvious. There's no skirting around it. There's no way that Cal McNair don't know it. There's no way that Tim Kelly and Bill O'Brien aren't talking about it. There's no way that Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins aren't talking about it. It's not a debate, man. You know what I mean? And Wade, you'll be the first one to go, now, wait a minute, there is a debate. There's no debate that these guys aren't put in position to succeed as often as the great offenses in this league with similar talent. There's no arguing that, Wade. And so for me to sit here and go, well, I'm okay with Bill O'Brien coming back as the head coach, I'd be lying. I think there's proof in the pudding for that to not be the case. I think there's proof in the pudding to not go, well, we're just going to elevate Tim Kelly to more responsibility and allow him to call plays on Sunday. Why? Because I believe that he's been groomed in Bill O'Brien's shadows. I mean, he is a Bill O'Brien guy. And Wade, when we talk about what needs to happen, is there needs to be a guy in place running this offense that has a lot of college schemes to it.
Yeah.
Has a lot of the zone read, the power spread, the screen game, should have a killer screen game. Those are things that should be the fabric of this offense. And in turn, those are things that Bill O'Brien and his staff are struggling to find.
Yeah, you got to find somebody to put in that role that understands how to maximize Deshaun Watson. We were just talking about his contract, $190 million or whatever it's going to end up being. You got to maximize that. You got to get your return on your investment. And so if you cannot do that because you don't want to put the person in position to do it, or you can't do it yourself, then that's a problem. And that's something that would be grounds for dismissal in the future. And I'm not talking about this year. I'm not talking about next year. This is but I'm not talking to you personally. I'm talking to everybody that's listening. Understand the timeline is different. Our timeline is people that have been following the Houston Texans since inception, and the timeline of what's going on over there are two different things. And so Bill O'Brien, the GM, I could rock with. Bill O'Brien, the head coach, it's hot and cold. Sometimes I'm like, damn, that's a hell of a job. That's a good call. I like that he did that. And then other times I'm like, what the hell are we doing? And then as an offensive coordinator, it's too inconsistent. When you talk about Bill O'Brien as a head coach, he's like a top 15 guy. Well, how many top 15 head coaches win Super Bowls? As a fan of the team, as somebody that's been part of the team, you want to see them take the next step. So as a head coach, he's like, you know, top 15, right? As an offensive coordinator, he's like top 15. That reflects in the wins and losses, and it reflects in the offensive production since he's been here, right? But you want to see them take the next step. What he did as a GM, like, I would contend he had one of the best off seasons, especially based off of what position he was put in by, you know, decision makers before he got the complete power. He had to work off of a certain set of circumstances to make certain of those moves. Like the fact that he had to get Tunsil with two first-round draft picks, it's because they had no left tackle.
Yes.
You were trying to get a guy like Matt Khalil to be the starting left tackle, and he's got bum wheels, you know what I mean? And he can't play at anywhere near what you need to protect a guy like Deshaun Watson. So that the GM went in there, and he had to kind of mortgage the future for right now. And so it didn't pay off as far as what we wanted. We wanted to see the Texans take that next step and make it to the AFC Championship game, and it didn't happen. And so now you're dealing with some of the backlash.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, Wade, when you talk about offensive coordinator on that side of the ball particularly, there's no justification not to make that move. And so on the flip side of it, I got a question the other day about who would be a good candidate. And I don't have a name for you because I need to sit behind closed doors and talk to guys, right? But I can give you a blueprint, and it's an Eric Bieniemy type of guy, right? Eric Bieniemy is the every time a job comes open, and I understand. Look, he hadn't been hired, and there's a conversation to be had around why and how and what the hell's going on and all that. But just save that for a different time. Right now, you talk about Eric Bieniemy's resume. He spent time at Colorado. He spent time at UCLA. He spent time in the league. This is a guy that clearly is a head coach candidate, clearly is a really, really good offensive coordinator, and clearly has college ties to his game and to his DNA and what he believes in doing. I'll give you, I Googled some stuff coming in, and I'll give you just a couple of examples. These aren't names that I'm recommending Bill O'Brien hire. I'm just telling you these types of guys are on the streets, and if you ran through interviewing 20 of these guys, it wouldn't surprise me if you didn't come across one of them that you felt like was a slam dunk hire, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mike Bobo. He's creative as hell at Colorado State. Former Georgia quarterback. Coach Matthew Stafford, Aaron Murray, and those guys in college. And the biggest part of him is people look at it and go, man, he sucked as a head coach at Colorado State. Okay, hard to argue that. But I tell you what, go look at his offensive output. Go look at what he did offensively, statistically, when he was doing more with less. And then translate that into Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins and Laramie Tunsil and Duke Johnson and all those guys. Tony Elliott, two-time national champion at Clemson as one of the co-offensive coordinator there. I mean, I don't know these guys personally. They may sit across the table from you and you go, man, what in the hell did I interview this guy for? But if you go down the list and you set the parameters of, I need this guy to have some creativity, some of that college-type creativity in his bones, and I need this guy to have done more with less, and I need to be able to watch film of him doing more with less, I think you would be surprised at how many good candidates you would come across, and I believe that that's got to be the route that he goes.
It's got to be the route that he chooses because that's the only way the offense is going to improve to the level to get you to that next step to win a Super Bowl, to get you to the AFC Championship game. You have to change. If you keep doing it this way, it's not going to happen. Like, I'm going to say this again. If you stay with the game plan offense, I don't see how it's going to happen because it's never happened before.
Yeah.
New England Patriots, only one team have done it that way and made it to the Super Bowl. If I'm wrong, and maybe I missed it, maybe there was somebody that slipped through the cracks, you know what I mean? Somebody text me, 713-572-4610. Call in. Let me know the team that approached it with a game plan offense and they didn't have an identity and went to a Super Bowl and won it. Because that team does not exist. It doesn't work that way unless you are Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, and that offense. And so these guys you're talking about, they're not game plan offenses. These guys that use power spread and all that types, every game, they just sit at home and create creative ways to put defenses at a terrible place.
Yeah, at a disadvantage.
Just put them at a disadvantage. That's what they do every single play. Yeah. It's not, hey, this week we're going to be this team. Next week we're going to be that team.
Yeah.
And this week we're going to be this team again. That's why you see the inconsistency in the offense. That's why one week you can put up 50 and the next week you can only put up 12. That doesn't happen with the New Orleans of the world and the Kansas City Chiefs of the world and 49ers of the world. Those guys are consistently good because they know who they are and they figure out multiple ways to do the same thing each and every game.
Yeah. No, look, you don't have to convince me, brother. I'm with you, man. Let's take a couple of these calls. We got the city stirred up a little bit here. Rodney from Spring Branch. Rodney, what's going on, man?
Okay, just with your other guy was just saying, okay, he's saying out there, but why Bill O'Brien haven't been able to do it? How many years he been here, man? I mean, y'all are trying to defend the indefensible. How many years he been here, man? It's time to pay.
Who's defending?
Nah, you trying to interrupt me? Let me say what I'm saying. The man has had time to do whatever you say the coach should have done, and didn't he come from college? He came from college himself, Penn State. Why he couldn't figure out is how he's supposed to be so smart? Now just give him too much credit, bro.
Who gave him credit?
You talking about the fans to just go ahead and be down with the team and all that.
Rodney, what I'm trying to tell you, Rodney.
My body and soul in no team, and you give me trash, bro.
Rodney.
Too much energy be put in this team, and you give me trash. It's time for this guy to go, man.
Rodney, what I'm trying to tell you.
Get somebody else, man.
Rodney, what I'm trying to tell you is it's not going to happen.
Why Frabel doing better than he's doing in 2 years, bro?
I understand.
Kyle Shanahan doing better than this guy doing.
I understand.
Look, just turn the page, man. Get somebody else, man. Quit putting all the faith in this dude, man. Let him go, man. Write it off. Give him a check. Like they did, Rockets did McHale, which I disagree with, but hey, they just gave him money and said, hey, you can go.
Right,
turn
let
the
me
page,
ask you
bro.
This.
If you want a new coach, let's go.
Right, and let me let's ask go. You this. Right, let me ask you this. They just got rid of Brian Gain, right? So if you are a owner of a team,
I'll be on Brian Siebel, man.
But
listen
to what I'm saying though. If you got rid of a guy, Brian Gain, you're still paying him. You're gonna be paying him for the next like 3-4 years. Why would you make that move and then backdoor that and get rid of the head coach too? From the business
man.
Perspective,
yeah, they got enough money over there. They got enough money over there off Kirby Webb Street. It is at Reliance Stadium. They got enough money. They get enough money. They getting nearly sold out. Fans paying all the high dollar for all these high price jerseys and all this tailgating and all this mess. Them tickets over there ain't cheap, bro.
Hey, Roddy, let me ask you
this. Turn
the page,
man. Give me a better product.
Are you a fan
of hop?
Can't
go on like this.
Are you a fan of
hop? Turn the page. Life's too short, bro. Turn the page, man.
Are you a fan of hop?
Are you all right?
He all right? Hop is just all right.
Yeah, all right, but he not going to be the best he could be with Bill O'Brien, though. And you just wasting all the white years with a trash coach, man.
Okay,
he's not the best, man.
That's the part.
Give us the
that's
best
the
coach,
right
man.
There.
Give
I
us the best coach, man.
I
turn the page,
that's
bro.
That's the part right there. That's the part. But those guys are still those guys, and those guys are still over there, and they're laying
fine,
on the
man.
Line.
But,
that's
but,
the part
but,
I'm telling you to focus
all
on.
The coach. They can't do no more than with a bum coach, bro.
I feel
they
you.
They don't do so much.
I feel you. You know, but hey, if you don't support the team because of that thought process, you not hurt nobody but yourself. That's all I'm telling you.
I ain't hurt myself. I ain't going to keep putting my mind, body, soul, especially my money behind no bull crap, man, or fraud. When they make it to the playoffs, everybody know they're fraud. They counterfeit, bro. They're going to get exposed immediately because they head coach, because he trash, man.
That's good. Rodney, I appreciate your call, man, but you can't just keep talking over folks now. Yeah, look, I mean, the point is –
Rodney is upset.
No, I get
and
it.
And
I get it.
Rodney
get
has
it.
Reason to be upset.
I get it.
But at the end of the day, you're going to be upset, and Bill O'Brien's still going to be the head coach over there.
At the end of the day, too, I mean, we can't talk over each other when we take these calls. Now, that's just bad. That's bad radio. I hear people turning off as we speak when we go to talking over each other. Let's go to line one. Let's go Kathy from Memorial. Kathy, what's going on?
Hello there. How are you doing today?
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic, thanks. I just wanted to call in. I know Mr. McNair, but it's deceased, very personal. He was a mentor for my son at the church in Memorial Drive Presbyterian, but I'm just so confused all about this because I completely understand what you guys are saying, but I do not understand Bill O'Brien having so much control. I don't think he ever thought that was going to happen. He took my son to probably a dozen ball games while my son was growing up, becoming an Eagle Scout, and I just don't get it. So please explain it to me. Thanks.
Yeah, look, clearly he paid Bill O'Brien, extended Bill O'Brien. I guess his father actually did, and so he's new to this, and as far as having complete control, and when you got to stand behind a guy that you pay to a certain extent, and clearly he hadn't seen enough to bow out from Bill O'Brien. And that's all we're saying. That's all we've been saying all day long is like, you can be upset if you want to, but Bill O'Brien is gaining power in this organization, and you can scream and holler and call and text and complain about Bill O'Brien's stability as the head coach, and it's not going to change anything. My man is over there gaining power, making decisions, making moves, and Cal McNair is letting it happen. And so that may change tomorrow, but where we sit right now, that is simply the case, and that's what's going on. Thank you guys for calling. Houston, thank you for listening. Enjoy your Martin Luther King Day. This is a special day in our country. Enjoy the heck out of it. From me, B-Mac behind the glass, my man Wade Smith, to my left over here. Thank you guys so much for listening. We're out.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.